Correct.
Illinois lost two governors. Jim Edgar and George Ryan passed away. Ryan was older. His health, you know, was kind of expected. Now, Edgar was a little bit younger and obviously didn't have quite the corruption background that sort of, you know, muted his voice in recent years as far as Ryan. But it was particularly poignant for me as someone who covers the state house, covers the Capitol, the governor Edgar lying in state on the rotunda. It was a sad moment. It felt like the end of his type of Republican, maybe even his type of politician. He really was known as someone who wasn't super dogmatic about everything. He was about governance. He was about relationship building, to some extent about deal making, shaking hands with the Democrats. Don't agree on everything, but we want to get stuff done. Got the state library building built here in Springfield and had a very nice ceremony honoring him in May. But yeah, it was a pretty somber moment when they said goodbye to him on the rotunda.
You're listening to Heartland Politics with Robin Johnson, a presentation of WVIK Quad Cities NPR.
Hi, everybody, and welcome back to the Heartland Politics show and podcast, which is aired on and distributed by WVIK Quad Cities NPR. WVIK is the flagship public radio station in the Quad Cities region of eastern Iowa and northwestern Illinois. I'm your host, Robin Johnson, and as listeners know, last week we looked at the top political stories in the state of Iowa, starting off the new year here. And this week we're going to look at the other side of the river and look at some of the top political stories in the state of Illinois. And to do that with me, I'm very pleased to have as my guest the editor-in-chief of Capital News Illinois, Jerry Nowicki. I asked Jerry in advance to give some thought and put together kind of a list of stories. So I'm very appreciative of him doing that. And so, Jerry, welcome and Happy New Year.
Yeah, Happy New Year to you. Happy to be here.
Well, let's get right off, start off here because we've got a lot to get through. But what did you rate as the number one political story in Illinois for 2025?
Yeah, one and two sort of go hand in hand, but for one, I had Operation Midway Blitz, just this unprecedented show of federal force. You had people in army fatigues just throwing people in vans. They had guns on city streets, just open carrying. A woman was shot in Chicago, not to mention the woman shot and killed in Minnesota, just in several court cases. The feds' narratives just fell apart for their use of force for the protesters they've arrested. So really, I mean, just that level of sort of militaristic troops on the city of Chicago streets was the top story for me.
Yeah, that's And I believe, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but the federal government did withdraw those troops here or ordered them withdrawn recently. So
And I'm using the word troops maybe a little more broadly, but the National Guard never really got deployed. But I mean, this was just Border Patrol and
right.
ICE, you know, to the naked eye. They're in military fatigues, carrying guns. They look like troops, but maybe that's the National Guard never actually did hit boots on the ground in the city.
Yeah, the technical term. Okay. And along with that, you listed an issue closely associated with that, somewhat closely associated.
Yeah, so the second I just have the lawsuits between the state and the federal government. I know there are at least 48 that Attorney General Kwame Raoul has filed or filed amicus briefs in, just challenging, you name it, funding cuts, the deployment of the National Guard, and he's been successful in most of them. It signifies just a fundamentally different relationship between states and the federal government at this time. I don't think in real time we can quite understand how drastic it is. I think we don't know how quickly we can get back to what has essentially been normalcy for, you know, the Republic's existence. But it's just, if the Trump administration doesn't like you, they can They've decided to try to pull the funding. We saw that with $10 billion in funding cuts to Democrat-led states, kind of spurred from the fraud in Minnesota, just tacking four Democrat-led states on for these childcare and TANF benefits that go toward childcare. So it's just kind of a drastic change in the way states and federal government interact with each other.
Just interesting because in doing the Iowa list last week, that of course Iowa is a red state controlled by Republicans. Lawsuits really weren't a big issue at all, obviously. In Illinois, they are because Illinois is controlled by Democrats, which is just a difference in the two states right next to each other, which is always interesting being here on the border.
For sure.
The next four is interesting. They kind of group them together a little bit. It's a bunch of big names in Illinois politics, mostly, well, from the past, mostly. But what was your number three pick, Jerry?
I think the fact that it's number three really speaks to the sheer nature of the federal stuff. But Michael Madigan, convicted, sentenced to 7.5 years for his corruption convictions. I mean, this is a man that was speaker all but 2 years between 83 and 2021, I believe, are the dates. And just an immense power player. You name the legislation, it had his fingerprints on it, whether it was legislation that died or whether it was legislation that passed. But it was an earthquake when he was named public official A. It was an earthquake when he was indicted, when he resigned, when he gave up the Democratic Party of Illinois post, lost all his power in relatively short order, and now he is an inmate. So there were other corruption investigations too that I think I tied into this point. Emel Jones, the senator, had deferred entered into a deferred prosecution agreement, will keep his seat. And then the ComEd four, who were all kind of mixed up in that alleged bribery scheme with Madigan, for either lobbyists or ComEd officials, all had been convicted. And then an AT&T Illinois gentleman had where there was a hung jury in his case, I believe. So just a lot of corruption investigations here in Illinois.
Just wouldn't be a top 10 list, I guess, in Illinois, unfortunately, without some type of corruption story being in the top 10. And for our listeners, if you're not aware, I did see where Madigan has applied for a pardon from President Trump, which in normal circumstances, you wouldn't think that wouldn't have a chance, but these aren't normal circumstances.
They aren't. Well, speaking of, I'll jump ahead here. Speaking of pardons from President Trump, we had Blagojevich pardoned after, I think, had his sentence commuted in Trump's first term. Of course, the infamous, we got this thing that's effing golden, trying to sell the Senate seat, trying to shake down CEO of a children's hospital, I believe, for Medicare money. Just crazy stuff on tape for him. It's all recorded. And President Trump, sympathetic ear. I think he, Patty Blagojevich, spent a lot of time sort of lobbying for this. And now Blagojevich is pardoned, and he, continues to go in front of cameras here or there. But, obviously, this was a thing that the Democrats did not like, even though Blagojevich was a Democrat, now calls himself a Trumpocrat. But it's when the president pardons someone like that, I think that's a big deal and a big story.
Seems like the one of the common themes of people achieving pardons or reductions in sentences from Trump is to kind of say that they were unfairly targeted by the government. And Madigan could make that case, whether that's correct or not. I'll leave that for the lawyers to decide. But he could try to present himself as similar to Trump and unfairly persecuted by the federal government. And who knows? Stranger things have happened, right?
I certainly have.
Well, the next one is probably the big electoral news of the year, I think, and we're still experiencing that to some degree.
Yeah, U.S. Senator Dick Durbin retiring after what will have been a 30-year career just in the Senate. He was in Congress before that. I mean, he's omnipresent in Illinois politics, right? Him and the governor weren't always on the same page, but they were always at least going in the same direction. So that's a big deal. It's really shook up some of the other positions, like Lieutenant Governor Juliana Stratton is vying for that Senate seat with, in particular, two well-known U.S. representatives, Roger Krishnamurthy and Robin Kelly. That's opened up those two seats, opened up the lieutenant or governor spot, which has been filled with the running mate, Christian Mitchell, a former deputy governor. Durbin not making any endorsements. But then there were other shakeups in Congress. I believe a total of five U.S. reps are going to exit of Illinois' 13. Comptroller Susana Mendoza stepping down as well, which opens up a statewide office for the first time in since the term that brought in the governor. So it's really just a lot of shakeup. You get a lot of state reps running for some of those positions, state senators, U.S. reps going for the Senate seat, and it's just a lot of musical chairs in the Democratic Party.
Were you surprised that Governor Pritzker decided to run for re-election in light of all the talk that he may run for president? I mean, appears to be taking steps to do so. Is that advantageous for him to be a sitting governor while running, or
It's
what
a
are your
great
thoughts on that?
question. I think it certainly raises his profile just by the sheer fact that, as a target for many of these cuts that are only affecting blue states, Illinois can't, Illinois politicians can't do much but speak out for how it's going to affect citizens and whatnot. So he's got that automatic platform as a Trump foil just by being the governor of Illinois at this point. Does he make the relationship with the federal government worse by going in front of the camera so much? I'll let their listeners decide, but certainly I think was I surprised? He kind of telegraphed it. He kind of said at points he'd be interested in setting that record for a Democratic governor of Illinois. But I think he likes the job. I think he is interested in being president, though.
Interesting. Okay, let's move on. We've hit. We're beyond the halfway point. Let me go back and review them for our listeners. Operation Midway Blitz was Jerry's top story. That, of course, was an unprecedented show of federal force cracking down on immigration up in the Chicago area. Second was a 48 lawsuits, at least lawsuits between Illinois and the federal government. Third was the conviction of Michael Madigan, former speaker. And fourth was the retirement of U.S. Senator Dick Durbin and a lot of the statewide shakeup, several members of Congress leaving, five representatives, Comptroller Mendoza leaving. We've got a competitive three-way race for the U.S. Senate on the Democratic side. Fifth was Rod Blagojevich. I hate to even say his name. Receives a pardon, so that gets us up to the sixth story, Jerry. And here again, we're dealing with some old-time names. Kind of a sad note.
Yeah, quickly, I'll say that for the U.S. Senate, those were the three biggest names on the Democratic side. I believe there are eight total candidates, but those are the three that are sitting federal office holders that were, or sitting federal or statewide office holders that were in the race. But
I
yeah,
stand corrected.
Illinois lost two governors. Jim Edgar and George Ryan passed away. Particularly, I mean, Edgar was old. Pardon me. Ryan was older. His health, was kind of expected. Now, Edgar was a little bit younger and had served more recent, or I'm sorry, Edgar was a little bit younger and obviously didn't have quite the corruption background that sort of, muted his voice in recent years as far as Ryan. But it was particularly poignant for me as someone who covers the state house, covers the Capitol, the governor. Edgar lying in state on the rotunda. It was a sad moment. It felt like the end of his type of Republican, maybe even his type of politician. He really was known as someone who wasn't super dogmatic about everything. He was about governance. He was about relationship building to some extent, about deal making, shaking hands with the Democrats. Don't agree on everything, but we want to get stuff done. Got the state library building built here in Springfield and had a very nice ceremony honoring him in May. But yeah, it was a pretty somber moment when they said goodbye to him on the rotunda.
Point out too that they're both downstate governors, and they may be the last we have in quite some time, just because of the changing demographics and population trends in Illinois. Okay, let's move along to the seventh top political story of the year.
Yeah, this was sort of a Springfield Sangamon County one. Deputy Sean Grayson shot Sonia Massey in her kitchen after she'd called to report a prowler. That video, horrifying, really sent shockwaves. It was a big deal that the state's attorney here, who was previously a Republican candidate for Secretary of State, I believe, John Millhiser, decided to charge him with murder. He was eventually convicted of second-degree murder, and it helped spur police background check legislation that has since become law, just requiring departments to divulge personnel records to any hiring department and requiring the hiring department to seek them and request them from the previous employer, because Grayson had he had was just a long disciplinary background at his previous employer. We unearthed via FOIA some disciplinary meetings with him, with his superior asking, you know, you're here a couple months, why are you still employed by us? Just because he was not listening to his superiors by not terminating a chase, just several types of little reprimand things that I believe they indicated his temper and his unwillingness to sort of listen to superiors. So it was a big story. It became a national story. I think the Massey family believes there was some amount of justice in the second degree murder charge or conviction, pardon me, and they wish it would have been more, but it's sort of the culmination of that tragic event.
Now, the next one is one I will confess I read a lot and keep up on the news, but I had no idea. And this is interesting, a topic that I take a lot of interest in. But share with us what your eighth top story was.
Yeah, this was early in the year, almost a holdover from 2024 to some extent. But the Prayer Band Potawatomi Nation became a federally recognized tribe, the first one, the only one in Illinois. And there was this about 1,200 acres of parkland in DeKalb County, Shabana Lake State Park, that there's a long story about that land, but it was essentially that the US government illegally seized it. Historians agree it's not really too much of a disputed record. It was illegally seized when Chief Chabanais made a visit to his tribe that had relocated from Illinois to Kansas, his kin there. And during that trip, and the US government claimed deed to the land, and it ended up years later being Shabana Lake State Park. And Joseph Rupnik was the leader of the Prairie Band Potawatomi as it made these efforts in the Illinois State House to reclaim that land. So just that fact, I think, was a really interesting story for me, even though it was quite in the beginning of the year where it ended up happening.
Yeah, that's the challenging thing about these lists is you got a tendency to pick stories that happen later in the year that are fresh in your mind. And so I'm glad you went back and got that one, which was earlier in the year. The last two are more policy type issues. I think that we had action on, in fact, just in the recently completed veto session in October, November.
One of them, actually, the most recent action happened today, 8 days into the new year, but transit reform passed. Now there was this, they had long talked about the Chicagoland area, just the COVID money was going away. There were going to be some massive disruptions in public transit for Chicago and its suburbs. So there was hundreds of million dollar fiscal cliff. It depended on the day what the amount was, but they did this plan to kick 1.5 billion to transit. Now, some of the earlier versions of the plan talked about statewide taxes. Those didn't end up happening, but they did. They're mainly just redirecting money from the road fund, some new taxes in the Chicagoland area, an increase in the sales tax, that is. So it's just about 200 million for downstate, pardon me, 200 million for downstate communities, which set off that familiar Chicago downstate divide because they were sweeping money from the road fund to sort of kick to this, or not sweeping money, but redirecting revenue sources for the road fund to this. So it did upset some people, but the fact that they had been talking about this transit fiscal cliff for years and then they got it done was a big deal in the state house. And now, we have to watch to see whether it's implemented correctly.
Well, just for clarity, Jerry, because I've been hearing a lot about this downstate. What the legislature did was take money that was intended for downstate road projects and then just shift it over for downstate transit. Is it mass transit? Is that correct?
I maybe not entirely. It's more that so there's Illinois has the motor fuel tax, which fuels the road fund, and then it's got a sales tax on motor fuel purchases, which are two separate things. So the sales tax in 2019 in the governor's first budget, they had earmarked what that sales tax money to stop going to general revenue, and over the years it would kick to the road fund. But now it's they're going to redirect much of that to transit and then interest gained on the road fund. So the complaint in downstate communities was that the road fund is the one thing that really benefits downstate, maybe a little bit more than the Chicagoland, and you're drawing money for it and kicking it to Chicago, which they just say in the long run means more expenditures up there than would have happened downstate if that money was just left alone. But it's not pulling f money from projects that are allocated. It's not stopping construction in downstate. It's just a redirection of funds to make that fund grow a little more slowly, make that road fund grow a little more slowly and kick it to public transit.
Okay. So there's something to that, though. I mean, technically, there is some money that would be for road purposes that's going to be moved over for transit.
Sure, yeah.
Okay. All right. All right. The last one. I know we've talked a lot about this recently, concerns energy. Very, very current topic nationwide as well.
Yeah, it might be, and probably even in Iowa as well, because they're served by some of the same electric grids. But energy legislation in Illinois, they passed a sort of a bill to incentivize battery storage. It's got this thing called personal or virtual power plants that are, it's aiming to get more energy from, residential solar and whatever else back onto the grid in times of high stress and do this grid planning process. So that passed in the veto session, and it was just on January 8th that the governor signed it. So a week into the new year. But it also, we got this report, I think in either November or December, that was basically stated within 3, 4 years here, maybe even less than that, in one of the grid regions, Illinois could be, the grid itself could have shortages, for, that could mean rolling blackouts or whatever. Energy shortages and capacity shortages. That's if nothing changes. This bill that Illinois passed was designed to get battery storage on the grid so that wind and solar can last longer. When the sun's not shining, when the wind's not blowing, you can still pull that energy to power the grid with battery storage. And the other couple of the other things I had mentioned, but also this this intricate planning process to where if the I think the energy bill from 2021 was called CEJA, Climate and Equitable Jobs Act. There's this intricate planning process that says, CEJA calls for getting power plants, coal-fired gas power plants that emit CO2, getting them offline by 2045. Now, this planning process could say, well, the grid can't accept that. Maybe we leave those plans online another decade or whatever. So there's going to be other parts to that planning process, but part of it is going to be determining the feasibility of those major climate goals of Governor Pritzker's.
I think this energy topic is going to be with us the next several years. It sounds like talk of nuclear energy coming back. And I just saw where a lot of opposition to an AI center in Logan County downstate, which reports are that those take an enormous amount of energy that might come back and cost consumers. So I think this is going to be a topic that's we're going to be hearing a lot about in the next couple of years.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Well, we got 2 minutes, Jerry. Looking ahead this year, I know we got the big election, but what other big stories you're going to be following? If you could kind of let us know here in about 2 minutes, I'd appreciate it.
Yeah, it's the I have no idea. I read a lot of budget reports every month. I have no idea what kind of ripple effects all of this federal action is going to have on state coffers. Obviously, freezing $1 billion in money that goes to childcare is going to have be a big deal. How quickly can Illinois regain that money? How quickly are there people who aren't going to be able to send their children to daycare because of moves like that? How does that have ripple effects across the economy? Medicaid cuts. I don't know. I just the budget. Long story short, the budget is what we're going to watch. We're always watching the budget, but this year in particular is going to be a massive test for the governor, because he prides himself on credit upgrades and balanced budgets. He had some help with the way COVID stimulus affected the economy and affected habits, where people were buying a lot more goods than services, and we tax goods but not services in Illinois. So there were a lot of things about that COVID stimulus that made things easier for a couple of years, but has that masked Illinois' so-called structural budget deficit? And are those chickens going to come home to roost when that money's gone? That's the question. That's what we're watching. And what type of new taxes or what do they call them? Revenue enhancements are we going to need to see to balance the coffers this year?
Plenty there to keep you busy. I really appreciate you taking the time to give some thought to this and put together the list. Jerry Nowicki's been my guest today on Heartland Politics. He took the time to put together a top 10 political news stories of 2025 and give us a little preview of what to look for in 2026. Jerry's the editor-in-chief of Capital News Illinois, really one of the best sources of news. I can't recommend it enough. Old-fashioned reporting and objective journalism, which we need more of. Jerry, thank you again for taking the time, and I hope to have you back sometime soon.
I appreciate it, Robin.
You've been listening to Heartland Politics with Robin Johnson, a presentation of WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR. You can follow Heartland Politics at WVIK.org or wherever you subscribe to podcasts.